today on Code Pen Radio.
Hey, everybody, time for another Code Pen Radio. We are smack in the middle of our mini series where we're talking with other business owners about their web business. There's often some kind of pretty strong similarity between what they do and what we do. Not direct competitors, really, but just that they're a product for developers or they had the same kind of trajectory we did or whatever. This time, we are talking with Mr. Wade Foster. Hey, Wade.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah. Our pleasure, of course. Wade, you are from Zapier, not Zapier. I've heard it debated before, but there's an easy way to remember it.
There is. Zapier makes you happier. So we can settle it once and for all here on the show. I'm sure we'll never get asked about it again. Now that people have heard about it on Pin Radio.
This is it. That's Close. The last time anybody ever screws it up. Yep. I really like that, though. Zapier makes you happier. Maybe you could, for the benefit of our audience, do the mini pitch for Zapier.
Sure.
Explain what it does.
So in a nutshell, it helps you automate like random stuff you have to do between various web apps that you might use. So you can set up something to automatically save attachments you get in Gmail to Dropbox, for your example. Or you could say someone fills out like a form on your website, say you're using something like Wufoo, they fill out the form, then you can push that contact information into like your MailChimp or like Salesforce or any other sort of like a spreadsheet, you know, anywhere else. We are going to about... Yep. I guess 700 popular web apps these days. So odds Whoa. Are if you're using some sort of cloud-based web app, Zapier has support for it.
So I think a lot of people have heard of you or use it in some way. It's a pretty big deal, I'd say, in our industry. And I'm proud to say in the last few months, I've finally become a customer of it. Not a very good customer yet, but I'm working on it. But for Shop Talk Show, we have a Wufoo form where we take questions. And we've since moved to Trello for managing our show, and it's so great. It used to be literally for years, people would fill out a Wufoo form, and I would copy and paste the question into a Markdown file that we kept in Dropbox to be our like running archive of questions to pick from. But since we moved to Trello and Zapier supports the Wufoo Trello connection, I could just have it automatically create a card, and it's literally saving me so much time. I love it. I love it forever. So that's a way that you might use your product is Wufoo to Trello, yep. which isn't a built-in integration of either one of those.
Yeah, not to my knowledge.
Yeah, I actually have a pretty cool, like I started using it since we knew we were going to have you on the podcast. And one of the things that I've started doing with it is every day at 6 o'clock, I get a little Slack update that says, what have you done today? We like to summarize what we do every day. So it's pretty cool. I got to set up a cool Zap that pings me every day.
Time-based Zaps as well.
Yeah, it's awesome. That's actually super
schedule.
Cool.
Schedule.
Yep.
Oh, I love it. So that's what it is. And so we have, you know, tons of questions about just kind of how it is that you run your business and stuff that we could ask for you about. And speaking of that Wufoo to Trello connection, I actually have I dug up an email from that I sent to Wade in January 2012.
Wow.
Well, I was at I was at Wufoo at the time, as were Tim and Alex. So we're all ex-Wufoo. So that's yet another connection here. And I think there was like a really super early YouTube video of how to integrate Wufoo and AWeber with Zapier. And I was like, oh, I saw that video. And I was like just telling you about how it might work on Wufoo or something. Super early days. In fact, that was early days for Zapier as well, right? How old is Zapier?
So we started in October 2011, and nobody, like the first person that ever used it was using it for Wufoo and AWeber, which was in December of 2011. So like what you're referencing was mere months into Zapier
origin existence. Story stuff.
Yeah.
And how many are there today? So from October 2011 to now we're in August 2016, how have you grown?
So we have point something million registered users now. We've from humble little, you know, WooFoo AWeber connections to lots of connections and lots of people using the product.
That is impressive numbers. And it was it just you on day one, or do you have a...
No, so I have two co-founders, Brian and Mike. And on day one, it was like a side project. We're from Columbia, Missouri. You don't, you know, get a bunch of funding and just like go work on your thing. You tend to have to like, you know, you have to be creative in how you start your companies, I guess. And so we would work nights and weekends on Zapier. And then use our day jobs to kind of fund hosting and, you know, dinners and things like that.
That's very, yet another thing that connects CodePen and Zapier in a way is that we were also three co-founders and kind of building it while we were at least the beginnings of it at other jobs and trying to, you know, well, I remember us meeting over chicken wings every Wednesday.
Yeah, that was our biggest expense at the time.
Yeah, for us was,
it was indeed.
For us there was a grocery store, Hy-Vee, for those of you in the Midwest, and it had a Chinese place in there, like a you know, kind of a crappy American takeout Chinese thing, and that's what we would eat over.
Cool. So I have some questions. We just went through the fundraising thing last year around this time, actually. So can you tell your fundraising story? I know you guys raised – we looked it up. You raised about $1.2 million. And can you explain how kind of that worked and, you know, what that experience was like and, you know, whether you've gone back to the till since then, that sort of stuff?
Yeah. So I'm an amateur when it comes to fundraising. We did it once. And like, honestly, I think the only reason it worked was because the product was so good, not because I'm particularly good or any of the three of us are particularly good at it. We were lucky because we went through Y Combinator in the summer of 2012. So they have like a lot of coaching around the whole fundraising process. And at that point in time, we hadn't reached a point where we were making enough money that it was like, we don't like, it's like fundraising kind of seemed like a thing we probably should do to like, you know, sleep a little better. All three of us had significant others, wives that were like used to a, you know, not a lavish lifestyle, but there is a standard and there's a bar that we couldn't quite meet, right?
Yep. Yeah, right. Like your family wasn't super excited about going back to the ramen
thing. Exactly. So that's at the end of YC, we raised the $1.2 million. And, you know, we basically just like we had a bunch of people that emailed us up until that point saying like, hey, we're interested in the product. We're interested in what, you know, it's doing. Like we might be interested in investing. You know, can we take a meeting? And we told all those people, not now, like we'll hit you up at the end of YC. And so I basically just after demo day, I emailed every single one of them, did a meeting with every single one of them, and then once that was done, we were basically done with fundraising, and then we went back to building the company.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Was it that's getting the investors, was the like filing the paperwork and all that stuff? I know YC makes it kind of streamlined.
It is, a while. They do like, you know, all that is like templated and stuff through YC. So it was just like, here's the standard docs. You can sign these docs. If you don't want to do these docs, then like, we're not going to work with you. So like, do these docs basically.
Were you guys a corporation before then? Like, did you start out as a C Corp or did you?
We actually didn't. So we had to convert. We were a Missouri LLC originally. And then YC, they have like some lawyers that help you get into the Delaware C Corp, which is, if you're going to get funding for a company, that's probably how you need to be.
But we had to do that too.
It was super easy to flip over to a Delaware C Corp. So like, it's not something that I feel like you need to like, it's like, oh, way in advance, you need to know that you need to be this. Like, it's just, it was super, like, I think it took like 2 days or something to get it flipped over.
Ours was a little more complicated. Did you do it at the end of a fiscal year? Were you guys able to like, keep two different sets of accounts? Our biggest deal was accounting. Like that was the hardest part, is like maintaining two sets of books and filing two tax returns and all that.
So we did it in the middle of the year, but because we really had made so little money, like it just didn't matter. Like, you know, we're talking like, you know, our tax bill would have been like pennies. So it's just like, it just didn't matter.
Gotcha.
So this is a long time ago. This fund, it was an early thing, and it sounds like you haven't gone back to get more funding since then, which is kind of an awesome thing. How many employees are at Zapier?
So we're at 48 right now, and no, we haven't gone back to get any more funding. Since then. No.
Yeah.
Way to
so
go,
I can look at that and look at, like, we took $1 million and we have like 7, 8, 9 of us, depending how you cut it or whatever. That's a pretty short runway for even that many people. So just from the outside looking in here, your 1.2 is like long gone and irrelevant to the amount of employees you have now. The fact that you have 48 now and haven't gone back to the till just says straight away you're doing good.
Yeah. I mean, we're making money now, so right. That's why we don't have to go back, which is exciting.
Yeah, that's such a great,
especially ticket. Exciting for you and whoever you've given ownership to, because it means that you own a huge chunk of it.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. And you get control of it, and you get to decide how you want to run the company, and you can make weird decisions like, hey, we're going to run a remote team, which I think is becoming more common. But it's still not something that everyone's quite comfortable with. So the fact that you kind of have, like, we have control over it, we can do things that maybe you wouldn't normally do in a company.
That's great. And which is, I'm sure feels good. What about Alex, who you're going to
ask? Yeah, I was going to ask, like, you guys have been around a while now, and you've been able to see your client, like, your customers mature. Like, how different are they now from when you started in the early days, when people were just trying to hook up WooFoo forms to other databases?
I mean, you know, your customer base definitely changes, like, the more popular you become. Because in the early days, like, the only people who knew of us were, like, fairly sophisticated. They may not be engineers, but they had some, like, technical savvy, right? Whereas now, like, we get, you know, accountants and lawyers and, you know, plumbers and just any mom and pop who's, like, using this stuff. And they're still, like, relatively savvy, but you can tell, like, you know, compared to the early folks, Zapier might be a little more of a learning curve for them. So, you know, we've had, now granted, the product's a lot better too. And that's in part because we've invested in, like, design and UX and, like, all this stuff to try and make Zapier super easy to learn. But, you know, it's still could be better. I think we all think that about our products, right? Like, there's still things that we wish were easier.
So plumbers are some of them. Is it really I could see people thinking of, you know, if you pulled somebody off the street and be like, who do you think the customers of Zapier are? You'd be like, I don't know, fairly techy people, I guess, but maybe that's not true.
No, it's like the bread and butter is still, like, you know, someone who works in tech in some respect, like a marketer or like a salesperson or like a web developer, a designer. But there's a lot of companies that are using tech to run their businesses, right? So we have tons of small businesses. And so, you know, if your small business, you know, like a sophisticated plumber is running some sort of plumbing because they have a CRM, they've got a mailing list, they've got, like, using, you know, Twilio to text them. Like, there are plumbers out there like that, and they're doing quite well because they've learned how to, like, you know, automate and operationalize their business. So we get a lot of those types of people.
I wish we could sell to them.
Running into us.
I don't think, no matter how sophisticated a plumber gets, I don't think they need CodePen, unfortunately.
I still remember one of our earliest customers, too, runs like a car part, like an e-commerce where he sells car parts. And, like, you know, fairly, you know, that's not a tech company, I wouldn't say. But he's doing a lot of sophisticated stuff with tech. To run his business. And so, like, that's the kind of people that end up really being good customers for us.
And so how do you reach them? You know, certainly at your scale, you're probably thinking about marketing in some way. You don't just sit around waiting for customers to find you. I mean, maybe you do. Correct me if I'm wrong. But do you think about marketing of it? It seems like kind of a hard thing to market because it's so unusual. Like, connect these two things together. Do people know that they need that? Or maybe they do.
It's tough. There's a couple things we figured out. One is because we're building, you know, integrations, we have access to our partners' user base, right? So, like, WooFoo, for example, they have a big user base, and their users use other products and know they want WooFoo to integrate with other products. So the fact that Zapier exists is something that WooFoo is willing to talk about. So they'll write about it on their blog. They'll send out emails about various Zapier integrations and things like that. You know, you multiply that across our 500, 600 partners, like that adds up. You know, that's a lot of users that we can tap into through our partner network.
That's kind of nice. It means that marketing in some sense comes from your part, you know, from the people that you integrate with. The more people you integrate with, there's some chance that you reach their audience.
Exactly, right? So they kind of figure out the hard work of reaching the customers, and then we kind of can piggyback off it to a certain extent.
If they're hardcore Zapier users or Zappy, they want you to, you know, that's good for them too. It means you're going to stick around at both companies.
Exactly. Usage of Zapier definitely is probably a very sticky and loyal user.
Yeah. Speaking of loyalty, I mean, one of the things we worry about a lot is churn. And I'm curious what kind of strategies you guys have set up to sort of not lock people in, but ensure that they sort of stick around and enjoy the product and don't leave. And I guess on that point, like, how's churn look for you guys? Is that a thing you guys worry about, or people who come onto the platform typically stay on?
That's a good question. You know, we sell to small businesses, so we have, like, churn is a challenge for us. Anyone, you know, small businesses churn just because they go out of business a lot, right? Like, their like success isn't necessarily going to be around for a long time. You know, the best way for us to prevent churn is get more usage, right? Like, and in usage in different dimensions, right? So if they are doing like WooFoo plus AWeber, that's good. But how can we say, like, okay, now let's add, you know, Twilio to that mix. Let's add Slack to that mix. Let's add Trello to that mix. And now they're using us across a couple different products. And if they leave one product, then they're still going to stick with Zapier because they're using it for multiple different reasons, right? But if you're just using Zapier to plug in between two things and you leave one of those things, well, you're probably leaving Zapier too.
Yeah, that's the end of it. Do you guys do any like customer education, like try and remind them of the different ways that they can do it, or drip emails? How do you guys sort of you've got a user and they're using one facet of your application. How do you remind them that other facets exist?
So we have usage emails that go out that you can set it to be weekly or monthly. And in there, we try and include some recommendations. We have like a really active blog and resources center where we're writing about use cases and how other people are using the products to be successful, including those in kind of like our just normal emails. We have like a newsletter that goes out monthly. The dashboard is kind of customized to you a little bit, so you can plug in, I use these apps, and you know, it spits out like
I just saw that today, actually, is because you kind of select which apps you're interested in, I guess, and then the dashboard then kind of suggests ways to hook those together, which is just kind of nice. I was just browsing through there today because you have some kind of feeling when you're in there, they're like, oh, I'm already using this thing, I might as well see what else I can stick together.
Yeah, so we're trying to design some experiences that make it a little easier to explore the depth of Zapier, because it's such a wide and deep product that you can come in and use, like, you know, a fraction of a percent of Zapier and be happy, but there's still so much more that you could be using it for. And no person will ever use 100% of Zapier. That's just the nature of how the product is. But trying to get you hooked into like a few other facets of it definitely helps with churn.
Gotcha. Do you guys, in your outbound emails, do you customize them per user based on what they have tried, or is it sort of generalized? Like, hey, here are some great ideas.
It's semi-customized. So like based on those apps, we can kind of, you know, say like, here's some usage from, you know, these are just popular stuff with these apps. But like we're not at the level of sophistication that something like Netflix or Amazon or anything like that's at yet.
Gotcha.
Right, cool. Yeah, and I guess along those lines, you get so much feedback these days. You know, there's things like user voice, and you know, we've even tried GitHub issues for reports and Trello and things like that. How do you decide what you're going to do next? Like, what are you going to build for those users, feature wise? Like, where's your development team going to spend their time?
Yeah. So one of the cool things we do at Zapier, which actually, we borrowed this again from WooFoo a little bit, is all hand support. Everyone at Zapier does support in some element. And our users aren't shy. They tell us in support, like, these are the things we want. And, you know, sometimes there are, you know, specific apps or triggers or actions that they want added, which are a bit more narrow. And sometimes they're more general product issues, right? Like, one thing that's been, we launched multi-steps apps, for example, in February. And a thing we didn't realize when designing that, because we hadn't ran into it before, was that when you get long apps that have, like, you know, 10 steps or 20 steps, you start to forget what all the steps do. And so,
I have to see one of these things.
Yeah.
So, 20, you've seen a 20 stepper?
Yeah, I've seen like a 70 stepper.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. Love it.
Tell us about this thing for just before you get too far. What, that seems like this was a big new release for you.
It was, right? Yeah. So in February, we launched multi-steps apps, where before you would just go one-to-one, right? So you'd have like this WooFoo to Trello thing, right? And that would be it. But now you can have any arbitrary number of steps, which means you can design like these whole workflows. So for example, you could have someone, you know, sign up for a form through a form like WooFoo that could go funnel their email address through a tool like Clearbit, which, you know, pulls in social data that could add that person into, you know, MailChimp and a CRM like Salesforce. Then that could also trigger an email that sends out to the user to schedule a time to meet via like Calendly. Then the user could fill out like the Calendly form, and then that could like trigger a, you know, meeting request through like GoToMeeting, and then, you know, email out a reminder for the event, post it to Slack to tell you or your team to show up, right? Like, so you start to think about like, you know, and this is useful if you're doing something like usability testing, right? It's like, hey, I got to find people, I got to schedule things with them, I got to remember to show up, right? Like, so there's like these workflows.
Built this because of your customers asked for it?
Well, people ask for multi-step, so we built that, right? And now, like, if someone's going to edit that process, right? Like, say you've designed that, you know, huge process inside of Zapier, you might forget, like, which steps do what? Like, what should I edit, right? And so there's no way to custom, like name those steps now. And so people are like, oh my God, I wish we could name our steps, or like describe our steps, or make a note on our steps somehow. So many people are asking for that. Well, it's like, well, that's very obvious. That's, and like, it annoys us that it doesn't exist too. So it's like,
very
okay.
Similar to how we would work. Do we get the feedback on the feature? Mm-hmm. You know, enough people ask for it, it becomes obvious.
Yep.
That's what you need to do.
Exactly.
This leads me to think about support. Like, you guys have this, you have a terrible, like, maybe not a complicated product, but a very involved product. There are, like you said, multiple steps that a person can take. What does this do to your support staff, and how do you guys handle support when it comes to, you know, requests? And what do you do when something gets really complicated like this?
Yeah,
and
this
and
tough.
Someone writes in, yeah.
Our support is like a little hairier than if you were just had like, you know, a straightforward, well-defined like to-do app, right? Because the tendrils of Zapier go into all these different apps. So we've had to like invest a lot into our support tooling. So we have like logging available, and then we train our like support team up on like how to read API logs and how to follow through with requests and understand like the HTTP response, you know, cycle, how to read status codes, that sort of stuff. And then that makes it a little easier. So when we talk to users, we can ask, you know, okay, what are you trying to set up? Like, how's it working? How do you expect it to work? How's it not working? How you expect it to work? Then we can go follow the HTTP request, like, you know, log, and see like, okay, is it mimicking what that customer is describing? Or are they describing something that Zapier doesn't even do? Like, they might think that Zapier could do a thing, and it's like, well, I've got bad news for you. Like, that's a cool idea, but you're not going to be able to do that with Zapier.
So I was just in the interface a little bit, and it has this, you know, when you look at, you set up an integration, not only can you go look at that and like see what's going on, what's connected to what and how or whatever, you can see every single time it was invoked. Mm-hmm. And you can see on both sides of when it was invoked, and you have this data in and data out.
Yeah. Tab.
And it's like, it looks nerdy, you know, like, I mean, it is, it's showing you like JSON responses and stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful.
Yeah. It reminds me of us, like, for example, we have this feature on CodePen, or we had it on WooFoo too, that was like kind of an activity log of like who did what when. And we have it on CodePen as well for more of a social reason, like, you know, X loved your Y pen or whatever. But part of the reason I remember building it on CodePen is because you're like, it would actually be kind of nice from a support perspective to know when people did what. So like if you delete a pen, it goes into that log so that if somebody's like, hey, where did my pen go?
Yep.
We can log in and be like, see how it's in your activity log when you deleted it.
Yeah, that's exactly why that exists. That big giant task history is like, here is exactly what's been happening in your account. And like you can see when it happened, what got sent through, like why things failed. And that transparency also helps breed trust in Zapier too, because it's like they can see all this stuff happening. So it's like, all right, Zapier is working for us. And so when something goes wrong, like in a, ideally they go check out the task history and they're like, okay, you know, they can figure it out themselves. But sometimes we got to train them up for it, because that is a big, it is like you mentioned, there are like, you know, JSON feeds in there, which not everyone understands. So
do you end up building a lot of tools for support, like for support, because you have such a sophisticated product, like for your own internal development team?
Yeah, we have a, we use Help Scout for support, which is kind of like a basic support desk type tool. And we've built a Chrome extension that like, acts as like this like command center. So like when you pull up a ticket in Help Scout, it pulls up all these, all this information about the user, right? You can, and you have like one click access to things in that user's account. So like, you know, the logs, the specific logs for a Zap, like Stripe, so you can go look at billing, like our Django admin, so you can look behind the scenes for what's happening there. Like just all sorts of tooling that like gets you into this user's account, familiar with what they're doing quickly, so you can answer their question hopefully quickly as well.
I'm sure. I'm sure Alex's heart is beating because we've built the same kind of thing. Although we've switched to Front, which is a really cool thing, and Alex built a little sidebar that's the same kind of thing. So you're looking at an email from somebody, and we have figured out who that user is, what their, you know, payment history is like and all that stuff, and kind of displays it in a sidebar. It sounds like the same kind of company.
It is. I can't imagine doing support without something like that. I mean, it would just be, it's like hard mode then. Like you're just inflicting pain upon yourself.
Yeah. Hard mode. I love it. So, yeah, I also see this kind of, there's some very like developer feeling features, like, you know, with, like you said, you have, what, you have 700 plus apps that you integrate with. And we know, you know, the downtime of apps is some, you know, you can't guarantee that any particular partner is up. And so if one of these things fails, I see it's a pro feature to have it kind of automatically re-queue itself and try again. That's so cool. You know, that it seems like, wow, that must have been a pain to build, so no wonder you charge for it.
Yeah, it is a pain to build and keep running. But so we have that. We also have something we're trying to like infuse more into the core product is our status board as well. So status.zapier.com. And there's a part there that shows the APIs we're interfacing with and like how we're interacting with them. And you can see like, you know, request you know, times, like how fast are the requests happening, and things like that. And so you can start to compare apps and like see whose APIs are like more performant than others and various information like that. That
nice. Get these people competing with each other.
Yeah, we're trying to infuse it more into the product a little bit, just to, you know, help customers make educated decisions and just kind of provide more transparency on what's happening here. Because, you know, you're working across three, sometimes three plus, I guess, you know, products, and, you know, knowing what's going on is like half the battle.
Yeah. Is there any like surprises in there that are fun to share? Like, are, how are Google APIs? Are they pretty fast, or are they like surprisingly?
I actually don't know the surprises. It, you can usually tell who's like actually growing very quickly, based on like whose response codes are slowing, like times are slowing down, because if they're slowing down, it's likely that they're just getting hammered a lot. And so they're probably going through like a pretty tough growth period. That's kind of an interesting proxy that we've discovered, that you might think, oh, this is a bad product, but really it's probably actually a good product that's just trying to like get through a hard period.
Right.
Maybe that's what's going on with Slack.
Oh man.
Quite possible.
Poor little Slack.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yep. Yeah. So one of the questions we had is, you know, as developers, you have a very technical founding team. You guys are all developers, I believe.
So Mike and Brian, yes, I'm more of like a, I would bill myself more as a marketer than I would a developer, though I can do some basic scripting.
Oh, so this is the perfect question for you, because like all three of us are in some form, like we're always in the weeds of the product. And one of the things that sometimes we don't really have a good concept on or a good grasp is how to market like a big, nice, big feature. Like when you guys came up with the multi-step zaps, like you knew that was a big deal. Like you guys had put a lot of effort into it. Did you have like a long campaign? Because you can always market things initially, but then after the fact, there's all these other marketing schemes that you can come up with and ways to like promote the product. What do you guys do for when you have a launch of a new feature?
So with multi-step zaps, we actually did a pretty cool campaign that we came up with a few months beforehand, and the gist of it was, okay, we're launching this new functionality. This is like a big news for all of our partners too, because a lot of our partners had been wanting this kind of stuff with Zapier. So it's like, how can we incorporate them into the launch was like one of the things we wanted to do. And so we basically went through and targeted the top app in different categories. So like the top CRM, the top email marketing, the top, you know, form software, top project management software. And we're like, okay, let's get them that top one involved in the launch somehow. And so we'll put all the media, the content, we'll do all the writing, whatever they need to like launch this, like we'll do that work ourselves. As long as they like, you know, publish a blog post and press send on an email that tells their users about this, we will do whatever they need to do to get this happening. And so we did that, and we had like Eventbrite, Evernote, MailChimp, Trello, Slack, Typeform, and like forgetting more companies, but wow. Like all these people, you know, emailed about Zapier on that launch day. And so it ended up being like a pretty sizable launch. And then the nice thing was, okay, launch day is done. We still have 600 more partners that we can talk about this stuff with. So over the next month, 2 months, 3 months, like you can just go back to those watering holes and do it again. And so in some ways it comes a little bit like fishing, right? You fish in a certain spot, you catch all the fish, and it's like, okay, we're done. Let's move to the next hole, right? Like,
I'm kind of envious of that. You know, like we have... You know, we're coming up on a product launch somewhat soon, mm-hmm. and it's like we're trying to think about marketing in a way, and we just don't have that. Like, I think we'll probably end up having to buy partners a little
bit. Yeah. I mean, in some ways, we're lucky.
We have lots of good ideas, but not, you know, we can't have Slack post on their blog about this, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
Guys go the traditional route? Did you do like TechCrunch? Did you put together a press release and all that kind of stuff? Or was it strictly through your partner channels?
We did, but compared to the partner channels, like that was so small. Like I don't think TechCrunch even picked up on the news. I think maybe like the Next Web did, maybe VenturePete did. So some of those like second or, you know, I always think of TechCrunch at the top and then all the rest of them. But yeah, so there was a few people that did, but just compared to the partner networks, it's like, it was just like, okay, that's nice. We'll email that to our friends who know about that stuff. But the partner network is where that was where the money was for us.
Oh, wonderful.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And was it very clear a feature like this? Because was it internally a big deal and then just feels like good long-term for the project? Or was it just like the money came right away? Like clearly it was worth
it. I mean, it was a big deal. Like, internally, it was a big deal. And then partners knew it was a big deal. Customers knew it was a big deal.
Oh, wow.
The day we launched it.
It's the best possible launch.
It was, you know, our sign-up rate, like, was... We broke records, like, 4 or 5 days in a row in terms of, like, new sign-ups. It was, like, best sign-up day ever, you know, 5 days in a row or something like that.
Nice.
And it was so by a lot, too. It was, like, not just a little bit. It's like, oh, we just eked out a record. It was like, nope, that's that. Like, by lunch, we're like, yeah, we're breaking a record today.
That must have been so rewarding for everyone involved, just what a big deal it is for
them. Oh, yeah, it was super
rewarding. To get that reception.
But, we talked about support a little bit. One of the flip side to that was that, oh, my God, we got all these new users, and our support team isn't staffed up to handle, you know, the level that's coming in. So it was also a lot of work.
Type, Andrew, type.
Yeah, so that's basically it.
Okay, so we're going to wrap up pretty quick as we keep our things about this length. But I'd like to ask you one last question. If you have any advice kind of for us as a similar, you know, based on your own story and experiences, any like major successes that you had that were a surprise or failures that you would like to see us avoid or anything? You got anything for us?
Oh, wow. So many small things. I'm trying to think what the one thing might be. You know, I think the thing that probably has helped us the most is like focus on like just focus, right? It's like we could, for the longest time, we could only do one thing and there would be so many good ideas that we would have. And we would just like set those aside and be like, no, this is the one thing. And we're just going to do this one thing really, 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 really well. And I think that really helped us out a lot because it's like, if you do a thing just okay, like it leaves like an opening for somebody else to be better than you at that thing. Whereas if you do one thing better than everybody else, it's like you're going to become known for being so good at that thing. So that's probably like the biggest thing. It's just like if you're going to do something, you might as well do it really freaking well.
That's great. Thanks so much, Wade, for talking with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks, guys. This was a blast.
Yeah, appreciate your time.
Thank you.